Several international aid organizations call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, warning that the health system in the besieged territory is on the verge of collapse. And also, our headlines, vote counting is underway in Turkey's municipal elections, in which the ruling party wishes to regain control over the major cities of Ankara and Istanbul. Our top story for this half hour, nearly 6 months into the U.S. Israeli genocidal war on Gaza, attacks continue all across the besieged territory, causing more deaths and destruction. According to Palestinian officials, around 80 people lost their lives in 24 hours. Most of them were killed in fresh strikes on aid seekers near Gaza City. A number of civilians were also killed as Israeli forces targeted tents belonging to displaced Palestinians in the central city of Deir al-Balah. During 3 weeks of siege on the Al-Shifa hospital, Israeli forces have killed hundreds of civilians in and around the medical facility. Some 100 Palestinians are also trapped inside the hospital while the regime has destroyed over 1,000 nearby homes. The death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza is approaching 32,800. Joining us now from Deir al-Balah in central Gaza, we have our very own Moti Abu Musabbeh, who's with us. With more details, Moti, what do you have to share with us?
Yes, actually, the echoes of the latest Israeli attack that targeted Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital here in Deir al-Balah city are still resonating among the people here. As you know, that attack targeted a tent of the Palestinian evacuees who are taking shelter in the hospital, alongside the Palestinian journalists who are covering and documenting the latest updates from the central area of Gaza Strip. As a result of that attack, at least 4 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed, while roughly 17 others were reportedly injured, including at least 5 Palestinian journalists. It's the first time for the Israeli occupation forces to target the front yard of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital directly. According to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, according to the administration and the spokesperson of the hospital, that they didn't receive any calls or warnings from the Israeli side in terms or regarding the attack. It's another flagrant violation of the basic human rights of the Palestinian people and the Palestinian journalists. By having this attack conducted against the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, it means that the entire health facilities working in Gaza Strip became targeted or became violated by the Israeli occupation forces. And actually, this attack raised the fears and the concerns among the people, particularly those who are still taking shelter in the hospital. We are talking about roughly thousands of the Palestinian evacuees and the displaced Palestinians who fled their houses and the residential buildings and neighborhoods after the Israeli occupation forces targeted their houses. They became homeless and they had no place to go but the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, assuming that it is protected by the international law. However, the Israeli occupation forces once again attacked the hospital, like all hospitals across all areas of Gaza Strip. So there are many rising concerns among the people that the Israeli occupation forces would reiterate and repeat their attack against the people here, knowing that the Israeli occupation forces crossed all red lines when it comes to the protected health facilities and the journalists who are supposed to be protected by the international law. When it comes to the other areas of Gaza Strip, as you know, that the Israeli occupation forces continued and resumed their air strikes against several areas of Gaza Strip. In Khan Yunis city, both the western and the eastern parts of the city were under heavy bombardments of the Israeli air strikes that were concentrated over the last couple of hours in the western parts of the city, particularly the vicinity and the surrounding areas of the Nasser Medical Complex and the Al-Amal Hospital. More residential buildings were destroyed. More residential buildings were blown up by the Israeli Israeli occupation forces using the explosive devices. And when it comes to the eastern part, particularly Beni Suhaila and Al-Karara neighborhoods, they were subjected to multiple Israeli relentless airstrikes that claimed the lives of at least 5 Palestinian civilians. So entirely, we are talking about roughly 16 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed over the continuous attacks that reached and targeted several areas in Khan Yunis city. When it comes to Gaza city, the current situation is still beyond catastrophic, as the Israeli aggression against the Ashifa is still persistent, with more airstrikes and more incursions that are still hitting the western part of the city and the surrounding areas of the Ashifa medical complex, in addition to Al-Nasr neighborhood and Al-Wahda street and Ashata refugee camp. They were targeted heavily by the successive Israeli airstrikes. More residential buildings were destroyed over the heads of their residents, claiming the lives of at least 5 Palestinian civilians, including women and children, while dozens are still trapped under the rubble of those destroyed houses. While when it comes to Al-Zaytun neighborhood, the Israeli artillery maintained its shell towards the neighborhood once again, knowing that the Azaytun neighborhood was subjected to a brutal ground offensive against it, whereas hundreds of the Israeli tanks attacked that area. So now the Israeli artillery shelling is maintained against that area.
Thanks a lot, Moti Abu Mossab, for joining us from Deir al-Balah in central Gaza. Moving on, several UN agencies have called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza as a death toll from the onslaught continues to rise. International organizations, including UNICEF and UNRWA, have said an immediate ceasefire is needed in Gaza to save the lives of people and provide necessary humanitarian aid. The organizations also warned about the spread of diseases. They said Gaza's health system is collapsing. On Saturday, the World Health Organization said thousands of Palestinians have to be urgently evacuated out of Gaza for life-saving health services. On Easter Day, Pope Francis has renewed calls for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. At a mass in the Vatican, the pontiff said children in Gaza have lost their smiles. He pleaded not to yield to the logic of weapons and rearming. Pope Francis argued that peace is never made with arms, but with outstretched hands and open hearts. He also called for access to humanitarian aid in the Gaza Strip. Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement and the Israeli military have exchanged fire again as tensions remain high over the war in the Gaza Strip. Hezbollah says it has launched attacks on Israeli positions inside the occupied territories. The Israeli regime has also carried out attacks on some locations in southern Lebanon. We're now joined by our Lebanon correspondent, Mariam Saleh, for more details. Mariam, what do you have to share with us?
Well, of course, we are here in South Lebanon, and you can always hear the constant hovering of the drones over the heads of people all across southern Lebanon. Sometimes it even reaches Beirut. And so in addition to, of course, the warplanes that also fly over Lebanese airspace, thereby violating Lebanon's sovereignty. Now, the Israelis have continued with their daily attacks, daily shelling of the bordering towns like Kfar Kila and Khiyam, which were targeted, bombarded very heavily today, in addition to Blida as well and Wazani. But the most dangerous aggression today from the Israeli side was that an Israeli drone targeted a vehicle in the southern town of Kunin. And we're talking about an assassination, it seems. We know from reports that there was one person in that vehicle, and that has become part of the Israeli policy of targeting individuals, which could be members of either the Hamas. As you know, Hamas is active in Lebanon. It does have a branch here in Lebanon, and they are active in South Lebanon. We also see that the Israelis are targeting, when they do have intelligence, they're targeting some vehicles that include members of Hezbollah. But in times, there's also targeting of civilians in their vehicles as well. Hezbollah has made it, of course, clear that they will continue to retaliate for the continuous Israeli aggressions. And there were several operations today. The Israelis Hezbollah targeted the post of Jordah. They targeted specifically, they said, the espionage devices in that post. They also targeted the Zibdin post and Ruwaisat al-Alam, which has become a routine operation for Hezbollah, targeting the occupied Lebanese Shabab farms. We also saw today day targeting of a recent post, which is called the Barakta launching site, where the Israelis keep their tanks and their artillery, and they launch their aggressions from that area. And Hezbollah mentioned in their statement that this is a recent post, and this shows that Hezbollah, that the Israelis are attempting to move away from their original post, perhaps trying to stave off any Hezbollah operations. But Hezbollah seems to have the intelligence to be able to know about these recent posts and target them as well. Hezbollah used the Burkan rocket, to target the Al-Malkiya post as well, and the Ramin barracks. Now, the Israelis are talking about reports of the fact that there were two drones that were intercepted by the Israelis over the skies of the Shabbat farms. We know that the Iron Dome system has been activated, and sirens are sounding on the eastern side of the border. We do not have any confirmation of an operation yet as to whether Hezbollah used drones today in their operations, but this, of course, could be possible since Hezbollah has been using drones continuously. We also see that Hezbollah is sending a clear message to the Israelis that they will target only military sites, while the Israelis are trying to find their way out of these limited scope of geography. But we're also talking about the fact that there are international players that could be putting pressure on the Israelis to turn down their escalation and not to lead this confrontation in Lebanon to go into a full-scale war.
Thanks a lot, Mariam Saleh, joining us from South Lebanon. Welcome back. Polling stations have closed, and vote counting has begun in Turkey's crucial local elections. Over 61 million people were eligible to cast their ballots to choose mayors and provincial council members across the country's 81 provinces. The main city of Istanbul are the key battlegrounds between the ruling Justice and Development Party and the opposition. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has described Istanbul as the national jewel and hopes his AK party will regain the city. They lost it to the Republican People's Party in 2019. It's believed that Istanbul's mayor, Ekrem İmamoğlu, will be the main challenger to the ruling party in the 2028 presidential vote if reelected. While the main prize for Erdogan is Istanbul, he also seeks to win back the capital, Ankara, that he also lost control of 5 years ago. Tens of thousands of protesters turn out at the 11th National Pro-Palestine demonstration in the British capital, London. Protesters are still frustrated at the lack of pressure being placed on Tel Aviv to avert more Palestinian lives being lost. Amina Taylor reports from London.
It was the 11th time the British capital had played host to another national demonstration against the US-led Israeli genocide of Palestinians inside Gaza. Coincidentally, this march was taking place on an auspicious day for Palestinians. March 30th is commemorated as Land Day to mark the 1976 Israeli killing of six Palestinians and the wounding of scores more who had gathered to show their affinity for a land that has literally witnessed the constant shedding of Palestinian blood. In an act of solidarity with Palestine, central London showed it would not be letting up on the pressure.
And they come in waves after waves after waves, tens of thousands taking to the streets of the British capital in a very clear message to the leaders within earshot of here that what is going on inside Gaza is a genocide and it will not be taking place with the complicity of the British people.
Flash forward to this most recent attempt to ethnically cleanse Palestine of its people, and it's clear the UK is being blasted for its complicity in allowing a ceasefire motion to go unacknowledged by Tel Aviv.
We're calling it a ceasefire, but they're saying for a ceasefire for 2 weeks to end the Ramadan. That hasn't even happened yet. So the question always beckons, what does international mean? How much power does the UN really hold? How much power does our government hold to hold Israel's account? Why is our government not imposing sanctions on Israel? That's what we need. We see a genocide continuing. We see a new ICJ ruling ask for aid to be delivered. None of it's happening. Where is our government? Where are our politicians speaking up for international law and international justice?
There have been millions across the world who have taken to the streets to make it clear it is the rulers who are complicit. Countries like the US, countries like the UK, who could easily stop this by just not selling arms. Stop the provision of arms. Withdraw it. And in that way, Israel has no other option.
A comparatively small counter-demo by pro-Israel supporters was peacefully drowned out by pro-Palestinians. The protesters taking part in the demo had a variety of reasons why their presence on the marches mattered.
We just want to bring this conflict into the consciousness of everyone, so everyone understands what's going on here. You know, children being slaughtered, you know, women being slaughtered, the schools and hospitals just completely destroyed. You know, it's just inhumane. It's just beyond imagination.
Yeah. We have to stop this. We have to. Don't you? No one can be blind to what's happening. It has to stop. It has to stop. Showing ourselves like this, demonstrating how horrified and outraged we are, and then boycott Israel.
This has to be constant pressure. Eventually, there will come a time where you know, then we'll get what we're asking for. I think the evidence is like undeniable.
Demonstrators have pledged to keep turning out in the streets to protest against the genocide in Gaza until there's a cessation of violence and justice for Palestinians. Amina Taylor, London.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
In Britain, Professor Pat Culler and the Royal College of Nursing's Chief Executive and General Secretary have said it is deeply worrying to see more and more overseas nurses choosing to leave the United Kingdom. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Almost 9,000 foreign nurses a year are leaving the United Kingdom to work abroad amid a sudden surge in nurses quitting the already understaffed National Health Service for better paid jobs elsewhere. The rise in nurses originally from outside of the European Union moving to take up new posts abroad has prompted concerns that Britain is increasingly becoming a staging post in their careers. The number of UK-registered nurses moving to other countries doubled in just 1 year, between 2021-2022 and 2022-2023, to a record 12,400 cases, and has soared fourfold since before the coronavirus pandemic. 7 out of 10 of those leaving last year, or 8,680 individuals, qualified as a nurse somewhere other than the United Kingdom or the European Union, often in India or the Philippines. According to research from the Health Foundation, many had worked in Britain for up to 3 years. The vast majority of those quitting are heading to the United States, to New Zealand or Australia, where nurses are paid much more than in Britain, sometimes up to almost double pay. Experts have voiced their alarm about the findings and said the National Health Service across the United Kingdom already struggling with about 40,000 vacancies for nurses and hugely reliant on those coming from abroad, is increasingly losing out in the global recruitment race. Dame Anne Marie Rafferty, a professor of nursing studies at King's College London, said, "It feels like the National Health Service is falling down the league table as a destination of choice for overseas nurses." She added, "Worryingly, it feels as if Britain is perceived not as a high but middle-income country in pay terms and as a staging post where nurses from overseas can acclimatise to Western-type health systems in the search for better pay and better working conditions." The Health Foundation report shows last year 12,400 nurses working in the United Kingdom applied for a Certificate of Current Professional Status, or CCPS, which they need to have to move to work in another country. The think tank said the largest increase among that group was in overseas trained nurses who had only worked in the United Kingdom for 3 years or less. That pronounced trend in short stays suggests that for many recruits from abroad, the United Kingdom may be simply a stepping stone prior to moving to other destinations. It pointed out that the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, data showed that while a nurse in the United Kingdom earned an average of $46,000 a year, substantially less than in Australia, $71,000 a year. Also less than New Zealand, $57,000 a year, and the United States with $84,900 a year. Application for a Certificate of Current Professional Status, CCPS, to work in America rose tenfold between 2021-2022 and 2022-2023 after a change in its visa policy meant many more foreign nurses were able to move to the United States. The Royal College of Nursing said the growing exodus of overseas-trained nurses was due to the significant erosion in pay the nursing profession has suffered in Britain since 2010. Professor Pat Cullen, the Royal College of Nurses Chief Executive and General Secretary, said, "It is deeply worrying to see more and more overseas nurses choosing to leave Britain. The recruitment of domestic nurses is collapsing and services are gripped by workforce shortages. With patient needs already going unmet, the prospect of losing more of our international colleagues doesn't bear thinking about." Pat Cullen added, "The reality is that sustained attacks on pay and poor working conditions are leaving the UK's healthcare services unable to compete on the world stage. International nurses, like all nurses, have every right to choose to work in countries that better value their skills and expertise. It's no joke that nursing pay in the United Kingdom is joint bottom of 35 OECD countries." The report's co-author, Elaine Kelly, the assistant director at the Health Foundation's Research Centre, said that with an acute nursing shortage and so many overseas nurses quitting the United Kingdom, if the National Health Service is to avoid becoming a stepping stone to careers elsewhere, it needs to be a more attractive place to work for all nurses, regardless of where they were trained. Elaine Kelly added, "The brain drain was especially worrying because it cost the National Health Service about £10,000 to replace each foreign recruit who then moved elsewhere." The Department of Health and Social Care said it did not recognise the Health Foundation's figures. A spokesperson said, "The latest Nursing and Midwifery Council data showed fewer nurses, those trained in the United Kingdom and outside of it, leaving the National Health Service." The spokesperson added, "We delivered on our commitment to recruit an additional 50,000 NHS nurses 6 months early, and the first ever long-term workforce plan backed by over £2.4 billion of government funding, will provide the biggest training expansion in National Health Service history, ensuring that up to 130,000 fewer staff, including nurses, will leave the NHS over the next 15 years. The British newspaper The Telegraph has also covered the same story. According to new research, 6 out of 10 NHS nurses have had to use credit or their savings over the last year to help them cope with the soaring cost of living. Acute financial pressures are forcing some nurses to limit their energy use, while others are going without food. Many are doing extra shifts to help make ends meet. The findings have added to fears that money worries and inadequate pay will prompt even more nurses to quit the National Health Service, which is already short of almost 35,000 nurses. The Royal College of Nursing, which undertook the survey of almost 11,000 nurses in England, said that too many in the profession had been left without enough money to cover their basic needs as they paid the price for the government's sustained attack on nursing. Separate research commissioned by the Royal College of Nursing found nurses have seen a 25% real terms fall in their income since 2010. Analysis by London Economics, a consultancy firm, found that the value of nurses' salaries fell by 24.6% between 2010, 2011, and 2023-2024, as a result of below-inflation pay rises and pay freezes during the last decade. The Royal College of Nursing survey found that 60% of nurses surveyed had either used credit or dipped into their savings to cover their living costs during the last 12 months.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another special edition of the program The Ocean of Dua. In this special edition during the holy month of Ramadan, we will be having a look at different parts of the supplication Abu Hamza Sumali. We will be bringing you different commentaries on some parts of this dua. We'll be back after you listen to these parts.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ya Mawlai, bi dhikrika 'asha qalbi. وبمناجاتك بردت ألم الخوف عني فيا مولاي ويا مؤملي ويا منتهى سؤلي فرق بيني وبين الذنب المانع لي من لزوم طاعتك فإنما أسألك لقديم الرجاء فيك وعظيم الطمع منك الذي أوجبته على نفسك من الرأفة والرحمة.
Dear brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing this part of supplication of Abu Hamza. Ya Mawlai, bidhikrika aasha qalbi wa bimunajatika barratu alam al-khawf anni. O my Lord, in your remembrance my heart takes delight, and with prayers I hold communion with you. It benumbs the pain of fear that torments me. Regarding this part, we have discussed the different aspects of heart, the most important of which was the reality of remembrance. We have concluded that even the highest forms of worship are having remembrance as their spirit. So remembrance is the spirit of any kind of worship. This is what we need to understand if we want our heart to take the light, if we want to remove the rusts of our hearts. So, most of the time, as we said in the previous episode, we do not know what the problem is with our lives. We do not know why we're anxious, why we're agitated. But the awliyaullah know the consequences of the sins and know why they are anxious. So, as the Holy Quran says, we sometimes even love to eat the flesh of our dead brothers. How? Not only we do not abhor backbiting, but in fact we enjoy indulging in it. أَيُحِبُّ أَحَدُكُمْ أَنْ يَأْكُلَ لَحْمَ أَخِيهِ مَيْتًا. It is evident that our heart's sense of smell is weak, but remembrance of Allah does not mean mere tongue twisting. In fact, the criterion, the axis, is related to the remembrance that is rooted in the heart, that is enlightened by the heart. You may remember in the previous episodes we mentioned that remembrance of the Almighty Allah first must be having its roots in the heart and then must be showing itself in the tongue of the supplicants.
شهر رمضان الذي أنزل فيه القرآن هدى للناس وبينات من الهدى والفرقان فمن شهد من فليصمه ومن كان مريضا أو على سفر فعدة من أيام أخر يريد الله بكم اليسر ولا يريد بكم العسر ولتكبروا الله على ما هداكم ولعلكم تشكرون.
The month of Ramadan is that in which was revealed the Quran, a guidance for the people and clear proofs of guidance and criterion. So whoever cites the new moon of the month, let him fast it. And whoever is ill or on a journey, then an equal number of other days. Allah intends for you ease and does not intend for you hardship, and wants for you to complete the period and to glorify Allah for that to which He has guided you, and perhaps you will be grateful.
So, this is the spirit of remembrance. The essence of dhikr is the attention of the heart, but verbal dhikr is not without effect. And of course, when we say that remembrance of Allah is not just about mere tongue twisting. Of course, we need to be aware of the positive effects of verbal adhkar as well, because they are not without effect and use, and they are better than vain or useless talk. Except at the time of talking to their companions or answering their questions, the Imams of Guidance, the Infallibles, used to perform dhikr. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, for example, has said, "The tongue of my father, Imam Baqir alayhi salam, was stuck to his palate." It alludes to his constant recital of La ilaha illallah, there is no God but Allah. So, the important point is that even the Infallibles have been teaching us throughout their entire lives to be always in remembrance of the Almighty Allah. The constant remembrance of Allah. Ya Mawlai, bidhikrika aisha qalbi. How could they endure all those hardships in their lifetimes? How could they face and tolerate all those problems, all those enemies, and all those challenges? Bidhikrika aisha qalbi. They could revive, they could purify their hearts by the remembrance of the Almighty Allah, by talking to Him. The heart is like a sea in which dhikr and remembrance exerts influence. Sometimes this dhikr is like the sand on the seashore that creates normal waves and footprints that easily disappear, but many adhkar and acts of worship we form are like normal waves, and the depth of our hearts is elsewhere. Sometimes, however, dhikr is a strong wind that turns the heart upside down, exerts a lasting effect. So, one of the features of the heart is that it can correctly grasp the truth, and this is the spirit of grasping the truth. How can we get our hearts to understand the truth, to sense the truth, just like the hearts of the awliyaullah who understand and recognize the reality of committing sins? This is how they could achieve that. Remembrance of the Almighty Allah. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Rabbana, Rabbana.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
Rabbana, Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Hayyu wa ya Qayyum.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be examining a very important question, which is related to the day that we are currently in. As you know, we are currently in the month of Ramadan, which is one of the most significant or the most important and significant month of the Islamic calendar. And, you know, there's a lot of virtues related to this month. Some of them we examined in some of our previous sessions. But specifically, today marks the night of ordainment. To be more specific, today is one of the nights that it is very likely that the night of ordainment will fall, this night of today. That gives rise to a question, and that question is this: why is it that we do not know when the night of ordainment is? What is the reason behind it? As you know, the night of ordainment is the night in which the destiny of a human being is ordained and decreed, and the events that will transpire for him are written down and they are ordained. So this is a very significant night. This is the reason why we have been asked to spend this night in the worship of God, His ibadat, so that, you know, and ask Him, you know, for forgiveness, so that the things that will be written down for us and that will transpire for us throughout the year will be good and to our benefit. So the question we want to ask is, why is it that Allah has not stipulated which night is the night of ordainment? He could have easily, told us what it is so that we could, you know, be more enthusiastic about worshiping Him and doing ibadat on this blessed night. The answer to this question has been given actually in one of the hadiths, a very beautiful hadith, in which one of the imams, alayhim as-salam, they tell us that God Almighty, He hid a couple of things for a very good reason. Like, for example, one of the things that has been mentioned is that God Almighty, He hid the acceptance of prayer in all of the various types of prayers. Like, for example, we have all of these different prayers in our books of prayers. And God Almighty hasn't specified that, hey, if you read this prayer, I will answer your prayer and fulfill your request or not. He didn't specify it. The reason why He did so is that so the person would read all of them and take recourse to all of these different prayers and du'as and litanies, right? So because God likes it when we pray. This is one of the things that, you know, has been mentioned there. One of the things that has been mentioned there is that God Almighty, He hid the night of Qadr, the night of ordainment, throughout the year. He didn't specify it, so the person would be careful about sinning on that day and on that night. Because if he knew which night was the night of ordainment, well, he would say, well, I can sin throughout the year. When the night of ordainment comes, I'll ask God for forgiveness and everything will be okay. Right? So God Almighty, He didn't disclose the night of ordainment. And He kept it secret so that we would be cautious throughout the year and careful, and so that we would spend all of our nights and all of our days in the preoccupied with the worship of God. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the night of ordainment and why it has been hidden throughout the year. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, in the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Islamic Republic Day. The Islamic Revolution in Iran triumphed on 11th of February 1979. Less than 2 months after this greatest event of the 20th century, the founder of the Islamic Republic, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, called on people to take part in a referendum to determine the type of system of government in Iran. Therefore, on 30th and 31st of March 1979, the nationwide referendum was held, and over 98.2% of the participants voted yes to the Islamic Republic as the ruling system in the country. Thus, 1st of April was named as the Islamic Republic Day in the Iranian calendar. This way of determination and formation of the ruling system has not had any precedent in history, even in the so-called democratic societies of the West. In view of the fact that the Iranian nation is a Muslim nation and had struggled for Islam for decades, especially with the leadership of Imam Khomeini, some officials and analysts maintained that there was no need to hold a referendum. But the Imam insisted on a clear and public referendum. The founder of the Islamic Republic said in his message to the Iranian people, "This referendum will determine the fate of our nation. This referendum will either draw you to freedom and independence or, like before, to suffocation and dependence on others. This referendum is what everyone should participate in. You can choose any form that you want. You have the right and are able to write on this paper democratic republic, royal regime, or whatever you want. You are free in this." On this great day, the faithful Iranian people demonstrated their national unity and Islamic solidarity with their decisive vote to fortify the basis of the Islamic Revolution. They altered the history of mankind with their fateful election. The Iranian people dismantled a long history of despotism, oppression, and disgraceful colonialism for good. The Islamic Republic has been the most democratic system of government in the past centuries, for superior to the democratic rule which has been claimed and propagated for decades by hired thinkers and writers in the West. The Islamic Republic is built up of two parts, Islam and the people. That's why the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, insists on calling it religious popular rule rather than man-made flawed Western democracy, which has proved its deficiencies and even contradictions with the votes of people. The establishment of the Islamic Republic not only proved the Iranian nation's will and their fate, but it also inspired hope in the hearts of the oppressed and downtrodden in the world. The late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, called 1st of April as a feast and said in a message, "The morning of 1st of April, which is the first day of Allah's rule, is one of our greatest religious and national feasts. Our nation should hold this day as feast and keep it alive." Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "There is another feature in our Islamic Republic Day, namely, it is not the feast of us, the Iranian people, rather it can be the feast of all those who are Muslims. It means nearly 1 billion people worldwide. They, meaning the Muslim nations, have also got used to seeing Islam in the state of defense and passive position, in the state of isolation. When a nation stands in the position of attacking the domineering powers and aggressive, incomplete man-made systems and proclaims a republic on the basis of Islam, this is certainly something to be proud of and take honor in for Muslim nations. In short, there are various features in the Islamic Republic Day." Clearly, the formation of the Islamic Republic system in Iran created a new theory among the political theories of the East and the West. Article 56 of Iran's constitution reads, "Absolute rule over the world and human being belongs to God, and it is He who has made human being ruler of his social fate. Nobody can dispossess human beings of this divine right or put it at the service of the interests of a special individual or a special group of people. And the nation wields this God-given right in the ways that will come in the next articles." The establishment of the Islamic Republic system of government in Iran, besides domestic developments, caused different changes in the region and the wider world, which were not compliant with the unholy goals of the colonialist powers. In view of this, the enemies of Islam and the Iranian nation hatched various plots to topple this system of government. These plots began since the first days of the victory of the Islamic Revolution and escalated after the formation of the Islamic Republic of Iran. They included the imposition of an 8-year war on Iran, assassination of political, religious, and revolutionary figures and officials, sanctions on Iran's economy, creation of barriers on the way of achieving peaceful nuclear energy, assassination of scientists, especially nuclear scientists in Iran, and commanders of the resistance front, and fomenting riots in various Iranian cities. Now the Islamic Revolution has arrived at its 46th year, and the Islamic Republic has already started the second phase of its life. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says, "Why has the Islamic Republic not suffered the destiny of other systems and other revolutions despite this much hostility? What is the reason and the mystery? I tell you that the splendid and honourable mystery of the system and its longevity is because of these two words, Republic and Islamic. The juxtaposition of these two words and the system of government, which is based upon these two words, should naturally be permanent. Both the Republic and the Islamic, people and Islam. Republic means people and Islamic means Islam, religious popular rule. The feat of our great Imam was that he created this thought, this theory, the theory of the Islamic Republic, brought it among various political theories, as, in that era, different political theories were in contact with each other in the East and the West, in the field of political issues and political mentalities. He realized this new system of government, it was not merely the creation of a theory, but he materialized it and created the Islamic Republic. This was Imam Khomeini's greatest feat. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headline: some 80 Palestinians are killed during IOF attacks on day 177 of the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. Several international aid organizations call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza,